Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, coming back for the first time in 2022 and joined by my always amazing co-host, Jessica Baker. Where have you been all my life?
Oh, I've just been so sad sitting in a dark room waiting for the big three to come back.
Your life has been void
it
of meaning.
It has. It's been devastating, but I'm so glad to be here.
I know. And like, we have not seen each other since...
No. Where have you been all my
life?
It's
true.
You ran off to a different state.
I just gallivanted away for a month. My family and I went to Melbourne and then
Delightful.
We went to Naruma.
Delightful. It, yeah, I can see a little tan.
I know.
A bit bronzed.
I know.
A sign of a good holiday.
It is. It is.
Skin cells and trauma.
No.
I use
50 plus, I promise. Mm-hmm. I promise. But yeah, it was lovely. How are
Delightful.
You? What's going on with you?
I'm good. I'm just plodding along.
Just plodding along.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
living life.
Yeah. I suppose there is something exciting
something
to share.
Maybe
just
casually.
Tidbit. I know... Listeners, I know that you have loved hearing my parenting stories with my dog Huxley, which have escalated. Come talk to me at a later time if you want to know the updates. But now I thought I'm so good at parenting and you've all heard that. You've all seen it.
Yeah, it's undeniable fact.
Yeah, I'm just amazing at it. Nothing's thrown me. Nothing's given me stress or anxiety. So I thought, why not add double, if not triple stress? Yeah. It's not quite. I'm not getting another dog.
No, you're not.
That would have been easy. No, so I've just decided to add a child to the
yes,
mix.
Yes, you have. Bless.
Yeah, yeah. So I've got 10 weeks to go of my pregnancy.
I know.
10 to 13, give or take.
It
Who
was,
knows?
It was a vibe, like not seeing you for a month and then like... Like, yeah. sister friend, you are pregnant. Just in case
it's undeniable.
You missed the train.
Yeah, I think every time I walk past a mirror, I just go, Jacob, I'm pregnant. Can you see? Look at this. What is this?
It is that alarming moment where you're just like, we can't go back from this. Like,
no, and last night I was like, Jake, how are you feeling about, you know, the imminent arrival of a child? And he's like, oh, it's pretty close. And I was like, yeah, we can't go back. It's
no,
happening.
No.
Yeah. Which is... overwhelming.
An exciting thing is this child is due in April. I'm born in April. We could share a birthday.
What's your birthday?
8th.
Okay.
8th.
Yeah, that's achievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I won't be 45 weeks pregnant then, so that'll be good. That'll be good. Can do the 8th, actually.
Can do the 8th? Yeah, okay, if you could make that happen, because I just feel like it would really solidify my bond with this child,
no
which
problem.
Is clearly high on your priority list.
No problem at all.
Amazing news. Mm. Amazing news.
Wild times.
Well.
So get ready for... 2022 on the podcast.
Oh my gosh.
It's just going to be an absolute treat. What's Huxley up to? What's the child up to?
How are they interacting?
Yeah, not well. I anticipate not well. Huxley's developed a phobia of children.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That is prime timing.
It is prime. So we'll see how that plays out.
We'll
stay
just
tuned.
Wait with bated breath. Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Reeder, preached during our services this past weekend, continuing in our series, Jesus and the Sydney Morning Herald, looking at contemporary issues through the perspective of faith. Now, Mark spoke about conspiracy theories and what it is that leads conservative evangelical Christians to be more likely to lean towards a conspiracy. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. And so today we're going to keep the conversation from Mark's message going in the big three. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark, and Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But for now, Jess, I'm interested. You were there. What was your vibe?
Yeah, it was juicy.
It was. I was ready for it. Hey, like the second that he was like conspiracy theories,
yeah.
I was like, oh, like this is like a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. Like whodunit?
Yeah,
I was ready
and we
for
love
it.
That. Our generation would lap that up. I think like I don't have a bunker in my backyard with canned foods.
No.
So
shame.
I'm not like that much, but definitely when the pandemic started and the vaccines rolled out, I was like, I'm pretty sure this is how I Am Legend began. And it just didn't work out well for anyone.
A movie that scarred you emotionally for a number of years.
My youth leaders took me to that when I was 13 years old at the cinema.
That was a
13.
Bad idea.
Youth leaders.
But that's a different big
and
three.
I'm 26 now. It's still triggering. So, yeah, I was kind of like, this is the start of I Am Legend. I'm not getting that vaccine. And then obviously science kicked in.
Mm.
But that's what stood out for me, especially what he said. We're kind of almost groomed from an early age to not really trust science as Christians. I'm a product of a Christian school and growing up in a Christian home. And like, alongside evolution in science, we were also just refreshed on the creation story.
Yep.
And it was very much like, so this is what the scientists believe, but this is what we believe, and you can't kind of have a balance of the two.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see how people get there of like already straight off the bat.
It feels like it's got to be one or the other.
Yeah.
Which was what Mark really spoke about, how there are passages in scripture, and I really liked this, that that we kind of – we can really take as black and white, but we need to understand the nuance of them. And that's not to water down scripture in any way, shape or form, but to kind of – I guess read the room a little bit and not be so closed off to what is being presented as fact and like tested evidence-based fact.
Yeah, and it's kind of – it's a bit naive or – I don't know. I feel like we're kind of protecting our faith to be like, I see that evidence on evolution or whatever it is, but that doesn't fit with my faith, so I'm just going to blatantly ignore it. And I feel like other people outside of the Christian, they don't really take that well. They're like, what do you – no.
I don't understand.
I see those fossils. I don't believe them.
Yeah, right on. Hmm. No, it was a cracker. I really loved that piece that he spoke about the history of grievance and how as, you know, for us as Christians, we've kind of seen throughout history as, I guess, our not necessarily influence, but the, I guess, the value of the Christian faith has kind of diminished over time. And so we look at that and it makes us fearful that it might happen even further and that can really shape our responses to things that kind of challenge us and might at face value seem to contradict what we believe. Mm-hmm. So like you said, we just kind of shut off and we're like, no, I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But that there can be a conversation, there can be discourse, and there can be a debate around that and that we can't respond to things from a position of fear.
Yeah.
And again, that fear kind of leans us that little bit closer to conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Hence the like, I'm scared of I Am Legend. This is where we're going. Super academic, super evidence-based.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't turned into mutants yet.
Not yet.
I'm feeling optimistic.
It's looking good. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Jess, what are we going to be looking at today?
Question one is, how do I identify if I believe a conspiracy theory?
Ooh, a little self-reflection.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not sitting in the backyard in my bunker, like waiting for the world to end. What was it, 2012 that was going to happen?
Yeah, I think there have been a few years, a few days.
The changing over of the 2000, the computers.
Oh, the Y2K bug.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was a big one.
Yeah, I was 4. Really hit me hard. question two, how do you tell the difference between a conspiracy and an alternate viewpoint?
Yeah.
That's important.
I think that's going
to
be great.
Because we're allowed to test things. Yeah. We're allowed to, you know.
It's all right.
Let's not go too crazy. Yeah. And question three, how could we best approach a conversation with other Christians who hold to some conspiracy theories?
And I think that's the that's the discourse. That's the debate, right? Because we don't want to – I think sometimes when we shut down the conversation, it's isolating for us. It's isolating for the other. Mm-hmm. You want to kind of be respectful but constructive as well.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Let's find that balance.
Let's find it, shall we?
Who will help us find that balance?
Well,
beautiful
it will be
segue.
None other than the delightful Mark Rader himself. Welcome, Mark. It's great to have you.
Wow. Thanks, man. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
Delightful. Not a term often used.
Well, mate, it's the beginning of the year. I'm feeling fresh. Wow. I'm feeling optimistic.
Are you ever?
Next week it'll be, here's Mark.
Yeah, here's Mark. Again.
Congratulations, Jess.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I've known for a
while. Yes, you have known. Yeah, me leaving the podcast to vom every now and then. It's been an absolute joy.
But our editing skills were amazing. No one at home
on
knew.
Point. So, excuse me, could you pause 1 second? I'll be back.
And very exciting news. Very exciting.
Yeah, look, it is exciting. You've had some exciting news also.
Yeah, well, I'm now officially a father-in-law. So, my eldest daughter got married the beginning of January and everything went off without a hitch. The weather held, the restrictions didn't apply to weddings.
Amazing.
Glorious.
It was all good. So, it was really interesting. You know, I guess, you know, there's always that little part of you that kind of watches what you're doing. And it was just kind of interesting kind of observing being at a wedding as the father of the bride rather than as a guest or as a friend or whatever the case might be. So it was just interesting to observe what was happening, but also just really, like, really lovely. Mm. Like, we were delighted with the wedding, so with the marriage. And
that's good.
Say that
publicly on the podcast.
Well, I mean, that was one of my reflections. Like, I thought if you were a parent and you were – even a little bit uncertain about the person that that would be so much more difficult. Mm. Whereas for us, you know, people are like, oh, how did it feel? And I was like, well, like, he's a great guy. He's really good for my daughter. Mm. Mm. They're really happy together. It was easy.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to celebrate that.
Mm. And you can appreciate that marriage will be hard off your pop. Have a go. But at least you've set yourselves up nicely.
Yeah, that's right. That's very much so. So, you know, that was really nice. And, you know, so, you know, we immediately started moving rooms around at the house, you know. So
nice. What have you moved in? Have you got a little gym downstairs?
No. No.
A little sauna.
I'm a little bit further down the pecking order in my house. So.
He knows who's got it, the other daughters. Yeah.
So the spare bedroom has now become a bit of a spare bedroom, a storage thing. The change is that I've been moved from the downstairs bathroom to the upstairs bathroom and have been given an entire drawer to myself.
Wow.
Whoa.
So, man.
My husband also lives out of a toiletries bag 24/7. Do you do that? Do you guys? No, you have.
No, yeah. I've always had a drawer.
He has his toiletries bag in his drawer.
Oh.
So he's brought this upon himself. It's so
random. Well, that's a valuable way to keep your toiletries bag. Because then it's being used rather than storing it someplace else. Mm.
Can I just interject? Is this really what we're going to be talking about on the Big Three podcast?
All we want to know, Mark, about the wedding was, were you a blubbering mess?
Yes.
I wasn't.
What?
I was. I know. I was as surprised as everybody else.
You were too busy observing the wedding. That's
right. Too analytical. No, I mean, I think there was a moment in the midst of the ceremony when I got a little bit emotional, and I had the opportunity, along with Ben's dad, to kind of share. We kind of both spoke.
Yeah, nice.
It's kind of the little message, and kind of at the tail end of what I was saying to them, I also got a little bit choked up, but I didn't shed a tear. So I think the book on it was that I would. So
a lot of people are out of money.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Mm-hmm. Did you do better than my father when he saw me in my wedding dress for the first time and said, yeah, you look nice.
Not that she's bitter about it at all.
That was 5 years ago.
Read the room.
I'd like to think I did.
Okay, good.
I mean, I found it really interesting being at home with all the girls.
It's right? A lot of
so
energy.
All the bridesmaids were there along with Maris and, you know, Nicole. And, you know, the photographers came around and the hair and makeup lady came around. So, you know, my job was just to kind of, you know, make coffees,
cook,
get dressed,
breakfast,
and stand in the corner until it was time to drive. But, it was really nice to see how kind they were and how gracious they were to my daughter, and just to watch the dynamics amongst them all. And,
fun time. Yeah, I want to get married again. Nice. It was so nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Delightful. So. Well, congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah. Very exciting.
It's all happening. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, now let's get to the conversation that we're actually here for, which is the Big Three.
All right, fine. Yeah, we can do that.
Great.
So our generation, we're big on conspiracy theories. We watched true crime, any kind of Netflix doco, we are absolutely there for. And I definitely find myself getting sucked in, but can kind of, for the most part, look at things from a distance and be like, I can see how that's a little silly. But, you know, you never know. So how do we know if we actually identify with a conspiracy theory? Help us out here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I mentioned in my message, I stumbled across someone called Abby Richards. I can't remember if she's a sociologist or a psychologist, but she had like different types of conspiracies. And I actually found that really helpful because I think we tend to think of a conspiracy as that the really out there examples, right? Like you mentioned, sitting in a bunker in your backyard, you know, kind of the doomsday prepper style.
A great show.
Yeah, that's right. Oh,
love it.
You know, or kind of with the tin hat waiting for the aliens to show up kind of thing. And the reality is there are quite a few different types of conspiracies, which I think is helpful. And I think that her identification of things that were false but aren't dangerous, you know, like, you know, has Avril Lavigne been body swapped or is Elvis still alive or whatever the case might be. Like, to some degree, does it? I mean, I think it probably does matter if you believe that. But, you know, it's not.
But does it hurt anyone?
Exactly. Whereas I think the more significant conspiracy theories, right, those that are, you know, false but are dangerous to you or to others or are just really out there and dangerous to kind of society, it would seem. I think those are a little, you think we want to be careful about those. I reckon that there's a handful of indicators, right? I mean, I suppose you could just look at a list of, you know, well-known conspiracies and go, yeah, I believe that. I believe that. I guess I believe more than I thought I did.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm a conspiracy theorist. That's probably not the most helpful way forward. I reckon that some of the, and maybe it's almost about saying, what are the sorts of signs, you know, like, because the, you know, my focus, as you mentioned, was about what is it in Christian faith, particularly evangelical and conservatives, that kind of causes us to lean towards that a little bit. Mm. And I think there's a few things that I think would be warning signs for me.
Yeah.
I think one of them is an increasing tendency to see the world in black and white terms, right? Because that dichotomy or the lack of nuance, I think, is often quite problematic.
Yeah.
Like if you've ever had a conversation with someone who would hold to a bit of a conspiracy theory, like it's hard going because it's like there's no common ground. It's one or the other. And it's like, can't we, you know, we can't, there's only one way to interpret the evidence. There's only one way to interpret the data. We use different data sets, like all of those sorts of those things. So I think if you were becoming more and more black and white, right, seeing things as just one of two ways, I think that would be a bit of a warning sign that you could be more prone to be believing a conspiracy. I think that it's also worth asking in terms of how, and I'm not sure exactly how to phrase this up, I suppose, but how fearful are you? Right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think that's another piece of it. Mm. Right. You know, you often find that there's this, sense that we're ascribing the problems of the world or things that are happening to something or someone that's happening out there that nobody really understands and sees, but we do, and all of those sorts of things. And you can see why there's a bit of a certainty in that as well, that assages my fear. So I'm like, I'm not as fearful because I understand how the world's working, and now I can be on my guard, and I'm not going to get the vaccination, or I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to go there, or whatever the case might be. So I think that would be another kind of indicator that you kind of fall into that category. And then I think, you know, I suppose you could just kind of look at, you know, how mainstream are your views, right? Like if you don't have, like if your friends or if you're losing friends over your views, that might be an indicator that, you know. Now, again, if I can come back to the, I guess, the point of the sermon, you know, Jesus says that he's come to divide, right? Parents against their children, brothers against sisters, you know, kids against their parents, right? All that kind of stuff. And we know that there's going to be times when we're going to have to take the minority view and lose friends over our belief in Jesus. But you follow me on this one.
Yeah.
If there's, you know, it's one thing to lose a friend because I believe in Jesus and they're like, I'm jack of it. And losing friends over things like how we understand the world to be run or around vaccinations and, you know, 5G and Bill Gates and you know, some of those kind of more out there views. So I think that would be a bit of an indicator. And I think the last one would be probably where are you sourcing your information?
Yeah.
You know, I think that becomes fairly important. Because, you know, and as I said, and again, Abby Richards was really helpful. There are some conspiracies that we know are true, right? Where people have tried to cover stuff up and they've done dodgy stuff and, right, it's been a conspiracy and it's been uncovered. So it's not a matter of just kind of saying, oh, everything's fine. Like there's never a conspiracy.
Yeah.
But there's kind of, you know, a lot of those conspiracies get uncovered in mainstream media, right? Journalists kind of picking away at anomalies and whatnot until the truth comes out. But it's mainstream, as opposed to a lot of the stuff that I think we find around conspiracies are, you know, like whenever I've read about some of those sorts of things, you hear more references to like the dark web than you do in regular reading, right? Yeah. It's those fringe groups. It's those groups that get banned from Facebook and Twitter. It's I think we have to be very careful. And this is obviously one of the points that I made about kind of who we're listening to. So I think those sorts of things would they'd be little warning signs to go, oh, I might be not just leaning towards, but taking a couple of steps towards being much more open to conspiracy theories. If I find myself particularly fearful, if I find myself more and more black and white, if I find that my sources of information are more and more fringy and I'm losing some friends over stuff that's not necessarily faith-based, I think all of those would be indicators that you're probably a couple steps too far down the path.
Yeah.
And it's so easy now with Facebook and how they're like targeting you. You click on one thing and then boom, you're just absolutely flooded
with that. You're in an information bubble.
Yeah, which I think the pandemic kind of brought that to light for me, in that like people are, like these pages and sites are actually being banned.
Yeah.
Because they're just really perpetrating things that are false, but they kind of come at you in a really like, oh, this could be legit.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that, you know, the whole, I mentioned this almost in passing, but like post-truth mixed with misinformation is a really dangerous recipe, right? And so that whole post-truth piece, you know, it's that truth, that facts are not the most significant thing. It's the emotion, right? So what do I want to be true, or what feels true?
You do you. You live your truth.
A little bit, a little bit of that, you know? Yeah. And so when I read something about that person that I don't like, and it's a negative report on them, I kind of want that to be true, and I don't really care if it's true or not.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm just like, oh, you just kind of follow it. You're like, oh, I can't believe they did that. Yeah. I can't believe they said that. And I've found myself now, whenever I have that reaction to something, because it's usually that really strong reaction. Mm. Like, you know, you read some stuff, you're like, oh, whatever. Mm. But when you have that strong reaction, I'm like, I wonder if this is actually true. Like, I've started asking myself that, because that really strong reaction to something where you're like, I don't know. It's almost like it's too good to be true. Mm. Wouldn't it be nice if they'd done this stupid thing? Mm. But in reality, it's often a magnification, something taken out of context, or just false.
But I think that questioning of is an important thing. So like, you know, to come back, how do you identify if maybe you're believing in a conspiracy theory? Are you questioning your own ideas?
Yep.
And I think that's an important
absolutely.
Practice.
And are we questioning who we're listening to?
Yeah.
Right? Because again, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, like, it's monetized.
Mm.
So it's not just, you know, it's not just information. It's we're trying to make some money out of here, you know, and so that kind of falls into that.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I think that probably is a good segue into our second question. So, Mark, whether it's trying to identify within ourselves or maybe with others that we know, how can we, as we kind of grapple with what a conspiracy theory is and how that takes shape in our life, how can we tell the difference between a conspiracy as an idea and just an alternate viewpoint?
It's a really good question, because I think what you're dealing with, of course, is a spectrum, right? So, you know, every conspiracy, I suppose, is an alternate viewpoint.
Yes.
Right? So at that level, you're like, but I think we all know that there's a difference between, you know, particularly some of those more extreme conspiracy views and an alternate worldview. I think that for me, I think probably the heart of it would be who else holds the view. Right? So, you know, I think one of the really dangerous features of, say, the anti-vax conspiracy, right? That And again, like I mentioned this, there are some people who are unable to take the vaccination. And so they're not anti-vax. They're just unable to be vaccinated. But I think, so I'm talking about those people who would say that.
That mistrust in science.
It's a mistrust in science, sometimes coupled with the belief that the government is seeking to, you know, to mandate this in particular ways, that they're covering up all the problems with it. Right. And that there are serious side effects that are far more common than people, like all of that kind of stuff that generates fear. Right. And all of those sorts of things. I think one of the most dangerous parts of that is when you get people who are well respected in a particular field who then start hold, like when they're unexpected.
Yeah. Right?
Like, again, I think we tend to place conspiracy theorists, if we were to draw a caricature, they're wearing the tin hat to keep the aliens from, you know, checking out their brain waves, or the government from checking out their brain waves. They have a bunker in the backyard. Like, we have a caricature about them.
Yeah.
But it's not actually
usually from, they're from the deep south.
Yeah, you know, and
bless.
Well, but it's a caricature, right?
Yeah.
And we often associate it with kind of, you know, like a lack of intelligence. And I think we know, like if we stopped and thought about it for 5 seconds, that that's not actually the deal.
No.
But when people who you think are very, very intelligent in a particular field come out as anti-vaxxers, that's really dangerous. Right? If it's just crazy Uncle Bill, who's always on about something weird, if he's spouting off about all vaccinations are bad and they're hiding stuff and it's Bill Gates and he's going to inject you with a... You kind of go, whatever. But when someone who is respected in a different field, like I think it's where the politicians. That's dangerous. And so I think that that becomes really hard for us then, because you have some people who are well respected in a particular field who start spouting things that are not particularly helpful or even particularly true. And so I think we do have to ask who holds the opinions, and can I find a breadth of agreement or disagreement, right? One of the things that I really enjoy about – enjoy is probably not the right word, but one of the things that I think I appreciate about academics is that no one agrees with anybody else on everything. Right?
Seems like a nightmare.
But
it's
there's something
to my self-esteem.
But there's something really valuable about knowing that if I get two people in the room who both agree, broadly speaking, on one thing, they'll still have differences of opinion on various details of it. That's really valuable because it means that there's something critical going on, right? There's a critical engagement with various ideas. Whereas it seems to me that while conspiracies are not monolithic in the sense that they're kind of unified and everyone agrees with everyone on everything, they do seem to me, at least from the outside, to be like everyone agrees that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And I find that suspicious, right? You know, like, you know, even within, you know, scientific circles, there's huge differences of opinion on various aspects of good science. How you interpret data is still an interpretation. But I think that we do need to be kind of paying attention to, you know, it's an alternate worldview, fine. How alternate is it?
Yeah.
Right? Are we talking like it's held by me and my friends?
Yeah.
Or are we talking about something that's it's a legitimate alternative? There's another way to look at it.
Yeah. Right?
So you think about politics, right? Broadly speaking, you've got Labor and you've got Liberal. Right. Yeah. There are two different ways of looking at the same thing, the alternate worldviews in that sense.
And
then there's like all sorts of variations within that. And you can go, those are alternate worldviews. Conspiracies, I think, again, are shaped, generally speaking, by that black and white, by that, by the state, by the ground state of fear that's found there. I think those are distinguishing characteristics about it. And they tend, even though they sound really complicated, when you like, if you've listened to some of the conspiracies, it's like, how did you get there?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, I'm not sure how you got there. But they do tend to simplify the world, right? What's happening is there's this elite global cabal who are seeking to control the whole world through vaccinations. Now, that sounds incredibly complicated, but it's actually a lot simpler than what's really happening, a global pandemic with various political overlays and, you know, money and
economic
kind of
implications.
Health risks. So I think that if it's a simplification, I think that's another indicator that we're not just talking about an alternate worldview, that we're probably kind of leaning towards a conspiracy. Yeah. So again, and I'm not an expert on conspiracy theories. I'm not sure I need to say that. I think that's probably fairly clear from how I've been addressing it. But for those of you, that's right. For those of you who think, wow, he sounds like he knows what he's doing. No, not really.
He's more actually wearing a tin hat right now.
That's right. I mean, you can't be too careful.
I think that's really helpful though. And I think one of the things that stood out for me in that is that, like that danger piece as well. Cause I think you're right. Like when there is debate, you know, there's disagreements on certain aspects of each argument, but not necessarily the argument as a whole. But when you completely disregard one way of thinking in its entirety or one way of behaving or responding in its entirety, then ultimately you're saying that there's no value in any of it, and that can be quite – the implications of that can be quite dangerous. Well, in certain situations, I guess.
In certain situations. I think you want an alternative worldview that it has a clear alternative, right? So, again, you think about politics. Labor and liberal politicians disagree about how to govern. But they're in agreement about the fact that we need to govern. Right. And that we need to govern for the good of the people. But what they think the good of the people is and how to best achieve that is quite different. But they're alternates of one another. Whereas the conspiracy theories just seem to sit on their own. Right. They don't seem to be a clear alternative to, like, you think about like the whole anti-vaccine. You just don't get vaccinations because vaccinations are a lie. They're fake. They don't work. Or they work and they're doing something completely different. They're trying to mind control us or whatever it is. That's not an alternative to
how do we respond to this pandemic.
Like it's a completely, it almost answers a completely different question. So I think we have to be asking like, what's this an alternative to? And some conspiracies are an alternative to feeling out of control, feeling frightened, like not knowing what's going on, finding comfort in the black and white. Like, so I think what is this an alternative worldview to? It becomes, I think, a fairly important question.
Yeah, that's super helpful.
And I think then you can start asking those questions about who else holds it and, you know, being aware of. And, you know, as I said about research, like, you know, do your own research piece. You know, one of the things about...
Triggered.
Not Facebook.
Well, yeah, that's right. Unless you're doing a study on Facebook. But but like the fact that you have to learn how to, you have to learn how to research. Research is not something that you just kind of pick up intuitively, right? And it's not like, you know, birds make nests just because they know how to do it and we know how to research just intuitively.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me that.
You know, so you do have to learn to do that. And the idea of being able to, you know, I think one of the most powerful skills that you learn in research, and this should be taught in kind of, you learn it in higher thinking, you know, high school and beyond, or at least you should, is the ability to be able to read someone I disagree with and fairly state their side of the argument without editorializing. I may disagree with them, and the time will come when I can outline why I disagree with them. But I need to be able to say, this is Jess's view. Right? This is her view. And to be fair about this is how she understands the world or politics or whatever the case may be. And then I do the whole, now I disagree with her on these ways. But if I can't do that, if I can't clearly state this is my, this is their position before I attack them, then we're missing something. And I think we need to be able to clearly understand, which means I have to be open to the opinion that I'm reading. Right? I may enter it kind of going, I'm not going to agree with this, but I at the very least need to be open to understand what they're trying to say. And I think that's a really important part. And we tend to completely
skip that part.
Skip that part now. Like we just go on the attack, right? In part because we're in a Twitter world, right? Where I have to be able to attack you in 140
characters,
how many characters it is. You know, and there's not a lot of nuance with 140 or 240, whatever it is. Like, it doesn't matter. It's Twitter, just even if they made it limitless, it's still not the way you outline someone else's argument. So we kind of have lost some of that capacity, I think, in society, which is unhelpful. So
I think that's a really helpful first step, though, in kind of considering this. Well, let's get on to question three.
So more now than ever before. I mean, I'm sure we've all in the past at a Christmas party or something had that conversation with crazy Uncle Bill.
Bless him.
But the pandemic has really confronted us with, oh, there are actually really extreme views, and people that you wouldn't necessarily think to hold those views are. So you're having to kind of come up against these conversations. And as someone who works in a hospital 5 days a week or whatever, I'm very confronted with the apocalypse now kind of situation that we're experiencing. So I'm a little touchy about things like anti-vaxxer conspiracy and things like that. So for someone who comes out all guns blazing, can you give me a little bit of subtlety in this conversation? How could we best approach a conversation with other Christians who hold some conspiracy theories? Help me out here.
Yeah.
Because I've just caused a lot of drama.
Because I think that was the point of your message, right? Like, as conservative evangelical Christians, which GBC, as you said, like, we may not be the nth degree of conservative, but we would fall in that camp.
Broadly speaking, yeah.
And so, you know, there is something in our faith. This may not be the best constructed sentence, but there is something about the things that we believe in Scripture that mean that we lean towards a conspiracy theory. So these conversations are happening, and it's not with the person that you would expect. They're happening in life groups. They're happening on Sunday after the service while you drink a coffee, and all of a sudden these conversations are becoming a regular part of our sense of community. And I think you're right. We instantly go on defense, regardless of what side you sit on, what opinion you hold to. It's just kind of human nature to defend my stance, right?
Overall, it hasn't been done well.
It's
not been done well. Yeah, there's people who have been really, really hurt and isolated by this, especially if you haven't had the vaccine. You're physically isolated because you've been in lockdown longer, but also you've probably just lost a lot of friends over this. So how can we do it in a really gentle, loving way? It's tricky.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of almost kind of big questions I would want to ask first, right? Like, because there's a difference between someone who holds a conspiracy theory and just it's a kind of a private thing, as opposed to someone who's like spamming other people's Facebook or commenting on other people's. So like, say within the life of the church, you know, jumping on other people's Facebook feeds and kind of going, and kind of linking to all these kind of, like there's a big difference between those, right?
Yeah.
Someone who just has it, holds that view privately, it's like, okay, that's different than someone who may need to be kind of brought into line a little bit to say, hey, like it's not helpful to be posting all of that, responding those ways. We need to kind of clarify. So there's a spectrum, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think in terms of if you were having a conversation with someone around a conspiracy, I think that there's a few things that you'd want to do. I think one, you'd want to be asking yourself, how important is this, right? So again, like if they believe that Elvis is still alive, like –
let him be.
I'm pretty happy for that to.
You do you.
Yeah, kind of. You know, the whole vaccination thing, that's a trickier one.
Yeah.
That is a lot trickier. Some of the really kind of, I think, quite bizarre conspiracy theories that, you know, particularly have been fomented out of the United States, like, say, the QAnon conspiracies and things like Pizzagate, or that the Sandy Hook massacre was a false flag operation by the government. Like those ones are a lot more complex, obviously. I think that we need to show empathy, right? So this is kind of part of it about, I think that, and that's part of it for me about recognizing that. No, you know, as conservative evangelicals, there are some things that without proper nuance, you know, faith, oversight, the ways of the world versus the ways of the kingdom of God, all those sorts of things could make us lean that way. And so trying to be empathetic, which I think begins with asking more questions, right? I think some of, and I know this is it's an unhelpful response, but I think a lot of my initial response would be to almost kind of go, you believe that? Which, you know, is not necessarily going on the attack, but doesn't set us up for a...
No, because they'd instantly be on the defense, wouldn't they?
Right. Yeah. So to be able to say, really?
Tell me why.
Like, tell me, like, what is it about that that makes you like, and not, and not trying, almost like that research question. I want to know what like, I want to be able to say back to you why you believe this. Mm. I'm not going to try to debunk it. I just kind of, where'd you hear that? Mm. Like, are they trustworthy? You know, what makes you think that that's actually true? What about the alternative evidence? And trying to have an open conversation rather than kind of an aggressive one. And I haven't had a lot of those sorts of conversations with people, but it seems that they can go pear-shaped awfully quickly. And so we have to be very, very gentle in those spaces. Mm. But then I think, as I suggested on Sunday, I think that there may be a bit of a back door to having those conversations, which is less about the conspiracy and more about those things that we would share in common, say about the importance of faith over sight, right?
Yeah.
And where do we find nuance in that? So you're not actually talking about vaccinations or the global elite or alien overlords or whatever the case is. You're actually talking about faith, which is important to me and it's important to you.
Yeah.
But how do we navigate faith and evidence, right? Like, I don't think we're called to a blind faith, but we don't have extraordinary, overwhelming evidence for everything we believe.
Yeah.
So how do we, and having those conversations might create a bit of a back door to then having a conversation about the conspiracy, where it's like, okay, so if we believe this thing about Jesus or about the Bible or about sin or forgiveness or eternal life or whatever the case might be, then what do we do with like something like a conspiracy?
Yeah.
You know, like, can we bring some of those principles of having some nuance in that and knowing what, you know, where evidence lies, where it is a leap of faith? Can we bring that in? Can we talk a bit about what the Bible has to say about wisdom in its context? Those sorts of things I think might be quite helpful. You know, and then I think we have to try to maintain the relationship as best we can.
Yeah.
That can often be really, really hard. This is not a conspiracy, but like I've had conversations with people who would be like scientific creationists, right? Six-day creation, young earth. And I have found those relationships by and large almost impossible to maintain because they just become so antagonistic. Mm. And it's, you know, if I don't believe what they believe, I don't believe the Bible. Mm. I'm one step away from denying the resurrection. And like, it's just like, there doesn't seem to be any common ground here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just becomes really hard to maintain a relationship where they kind of assume that you're like one step away from an atheist. So we do have to try to, right?
Yeah.
Kind of maintain those relationships as best we can, but that can be hard. Mm. You can end up, you know, because our friendships, even in the body of Christ, do rely a little bit on commonality.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you end up with being friends with people at the church you go to because you have a whole bunch in common, right? Not just the place you go and the people that you know, but the things that you believe. And so when that belief gap becomes really extreme, it's just like, what do we talk about? You know, how's your house? You know, like, is your dog okay? You know, and it just limits and it limits the conversation options, and then the relationship gets really shallow because there's nothing left to talk about that doesn't become problematic. And so I think, you know, how we navigate those are always, always really complicated. But I think if we can show empathy, if we can be really careful not to attack or to belittle and do our best to try to understand. Mm. And then to some degree, I would probably encourage, you know, if you, you know, it's probably going to be a couple of conversations before you truly understand.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that if it takes three conversations to understand, that you don't go on the attack until the fourth conversation.
Yeah. Right?
And even then I wouldn't go on the attack. But like it's the fourth conversation that where you've built some trust about, I'm not going to belittle you. I'm not going to make fun of you. Mm. I'm not going to kind of try to convince you otherwise. But now can I ask some questions, you know, like about this? You know, what do you do with, you know, like say with vaccinations? You know, there seems to be a focus in some of the vaccination conspiracies around the relatively statistically insignificant, but obviously personally traumatic side effects, right? Like we know that, you know, hundreds of millions of doses of the COVID-19 vaccine have been given. We do know that in some cases it's resulted in sickness and death. Individually, that is devastating.
Yeah.
Right? Statistically, statistically, it's insignificant.
Yeah.
But in the life of an individual, like, it's huge. Massive.
Yeah.
But if you only focus on the impact on an individual in a statistically insignificant number of cases, it like it really skews the way you think about the science of it, right? And so, but how do you deal with the fact that we've given out hundreds of millions of doses and the percentage of people,
billions even,
we're probably in there, aren't you? And that the percentage of people who have had serious or fatal side effects is really, 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 really small. Like, what do you do with that? Like, and again, not to try to belittle or go all mathematic on you, but just to kind of go, like, how do you, like, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
What do you do with the fact that no one seems to become a mutant yet? Like,
watch this space.
You know, but like, it's, and again, to kind of build some trust to have those conversations, I think becomes fairly important. And I think, you know, probably lastly, you know, I would really want to remind someone who is really down that whole conspiracy theory piece to remind them of the purpose that we've been given as followers of Jesus. Like, we are not going to be graded on how we responded to the vaccine.
No.
We're going to be, you know, held to account on our life as followers of Jesus. And I think we need to sometimes help people kind of connect. And this is true, not just in conspiracies, but in everyone's life, right? We need to help people connect how they're living and what they're saying and what they're doing with their Christian witness.
Yeah.
And I think conspiracy theories can fall within that category about, you know, you're getting really wound up about this. Let me just remind you what we're on about, what we share together. Like, we want people to know Jesus. I'm not sure that we really want them to, like, we're not trying to evangelize for or against a conspiracy about how the world works. We're trying to bring people to Jesus. So I think that would be a really important thing to remind people about, to build more common ground to.
And I think already the general population thinks Christianity is a conspiracy, really, like that we're just a little bit far out there and we believe some wild things. So if you pair that with the Christian at the protest holding a sign, who is also like really into this wild conspiracy theory, then like it's just so damaging. To our image as Christians of like, well, they're just crazy. They'll just believe anything.
Yeah. Well, like it can bring the gospel into disrepute. Like,
That's right.
So,
And I mean, you know, that's where the, of course, that it's, I wouldn't necessarily call it the media bias, but like the media covers the outrageous. And so you get the outrageous, it's, you know, do the majority of Christians believe conspiracies? Probably not. But the ones we see in the paper are not the kind of the standard rant, you know, like.
They're also the most vocal and public about,
you know, and so you just end up with
just trying to live our lives, share a bit of Jesus along the way.
and it's like this with anything that we're unfamiliar with. So if someone's not a Christian and doesn't know Christians or doesn't know them particularly well, like all Christians are just Christians.
Yeah.
And they don't make the distinction between denominations. Right. Or think about liberal versus conservative branches. Just like I don't think that way, say, about something like Buddhism. Buddhism, for what I know of it, is like it's just one thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I know that that's not the case.
Yeah.
I'm just not familiar enough with it to know.
Yeah.
So if I see some sort of radically, you know, bizarre behavior from a Buddhist, I'll be like, well, that must be normal.
Yeah.
Now, you know, again, I know that that's probably not the case, but I can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference between a conservative and a liberal Buddhist.
Yeah.
And as I say that, I'm like, if there are such things, but for those outside the church, they just look and go, oh, they're a bunch of loonies.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Jesus is my vaccine brigade. Like, what's that all about? And then everyone gets painted with that same brush. Like Islam got kind of, you know.
Yeah, I was just
about
to say.
They're all terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're like, well, I'm pretty sure that's not true. You know, like, I'm pretty sure that's not true. But, you know, from the outside, you know, and while I know that they're not all terrorists, do I know much about the distinctions between Islam? Not really. Mm. So again, like that's what's happening for us, right?
Yeah.
When people just don't know about Christianity. Mm. And so it does become that whole, you know, the actions of a few do end up tarring them. Mm.
Yeah, we're all Westboro Baptists serving here.
Yeah.
It's rough.
It's complicated. It's a complicated thing to tackle, to consider, to sit in a conversation with. But like you said on Sunday, Mark, and I hope that this conversation has continued that this is a helpful starting point for many people as they consider how they interact with information that they receive from the world, how they perceive the world, and how they interact with others who might have a differing point of view.
Yeah.
I think it's an important conversation for us to be having.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Well, thank you. I have to say, like, I did a big three after January 2nd. It was just me.
That's fun.
Well, how did that go?
I mean, I don't mind talking to myself.
Who
that
asked the questions?
Oh, I asked them.
So, Mark, what we're asking in the big three today, well, Mark, yeah, that's really interesting.
I had questions to work with, but I just had to present them and then answer them. And but I missed both of you. And,
so you're not firing us.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Guys, I can do this by myself. Get out.
It was a little bit boring and a little bit strange sitting in a room by myself talking about questions and just missing the general interaction. So it was lovely to have you both back.
I'm going to go back and listen to that. Me too.
I want to hear what it's like.
The summer series.
Summer series, bless.
Big three on leave.
We appreciate your commitment to the podcast.
Well, you know, I did my best. But
that's all we can ask.
That's all you got. So. Yeah. See you guys.
Oh, my friend, that was a doozy of a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? Like, what stood out for you? What was the big take home?
I think I'm kind of just reflecting on the conversations I have had with people, particularly around the vaccine and things, obviously, because that's so topical as well. I kept kind of thinking of that new movie that's come out on Netflix, Don't Look Up. Have you watched it?
I haven't yet. It's on my list. You need
to. Yeah, yeah. And that's all about kind of global warming and this absolute mistrust of science and evidence and how we've kind of gone like, oh, I see you scientists, but no, we don't believe that. And it's just really sad for me, especially watching that movie. I kind of sat there for a good 20 minutes after the movie just in silence, like, oh my gosh, this is awful. Kind of grappling with like, but how do we approach that for people in a loving way and an empathetic way and not just kind of going like, are you crazy? Like, there's so much evidence for global warming, like compost something, please. but I think that was really kind of good discussion around all that. Yeah.
Yeah. I really loved that piece that Mark said about like, we need to be able to present someone's opinion back to them in an unbiased way, and that's actually quite powerful. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, particularly a lot of the conversation was like, hey, do we have common ground? Can we utilize and discuss our common ground? And I think that practice of almost reflecting back to someone what they have shared to you helps, particularly if there isn't much common ground, because it at least helps place you in a position where I'm trying to understand you. I'm not attacking you. I'm not just going to ride you off as this kind of crazy individual, because they may not be like, but I'm just trying to understand so that we can have a constructive conversation. I'm like, actually, I think my first response is to respond when someone shares something. Mm. It's like, okay, well, what about this? What about that? And, you know, we believe this or I believe that. Like, how does that reconcile? But to just kind of reflect back and to demonstrate an empathy and a willingness to listen and to learn, kind of be like, have I understood that clearly? Okay, now that I have, can I ask some questions of it? I think that's really powerful. And I think that creates more of a debate than and like conflict, I think, because debates can be powerful and constructive. Mm. So, I think you're right. I think over the last couple of years, conspiracy theories, like as an idea, has been something that's felt far more real because we have had certain topics really come to the forefront and that conversation has almost been normalized, and almost the experience of other really different views has been normalized. Whereas I think for me, 2 years ago, conspiracy theories was like, I don't know, those movies. I was trying to think of a good movie with a conspiracy theory, but The Fugitive. Oh my gosh, that was a great conspiracy theory. Anyway, but something like that where it's crazy and out there and, you know, it's Uncle Bill with the tin hat.
But this is just every day and we're having to make decisions.
And have conversations. Yeah, yeah. And we will find ourselves in them. And so,
definitely.
Yeah, I think this is a great starting point for us.
And having a way out, especially with Christians, of like, oh, okay, so we've come to a head on this. I had one conversation with a Christian of like, here is the evidence that New South Wales Health is giving for pregnant women and the vaccine. It's got literally two pages of references. It's got the stats of, you know, the studies that they've done in the UK and the US, blah, blah, blah. And she just replied back, I don't believe that. I think that evidence is fake. I was like, oh, okay. So we've hit a bit of an impasse here. Don't quite know where to go with that. But knowing that, okay, cool, we're not going to agree on this, that's fine. It's actually not essential to our mission.
Yeah.
So let's focus on that.
Yeah.
And kind of potentially come at it from a different angle of like, what's this kind of mindset doing for the mission?
Yep.
Is it helping it or is it hindering it? Or, you know, is there a happy balance or whatever?
Yeah.
It would be nice to kind of, okay, move. That's not working. Let's move on to focus on what is our common ground, which is Jesus.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Oh.
Good to be back.
Great to be back. What a doozy of a first episode. My days. Well, not first episode. Of course, we don't want to belittle Raiders' single one-man show.
It's absolutely essential and it should be in the halls of glory of the podcast.
I think it was interesting that we were both like, well, we'll listen to that. Clearly demonstrating that we did not. but my friend, it is great to be back and doing the big three with you. Cannot wait for next week. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this coming Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or use the Slido link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.